Hello, GrowCast listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Jordan River here, your host. And today I have an episode with Jake from Northern Frost Genetics. It's a really cool breeder feature. And we talk about not only his work, but about autoflowers in general and tips on breeding and tips on growing autoflowers. A lot of really, really cool stuff coming your way in a second here. But first, I wanted to give you guys a heads up about our membership program, GrowPass, at mygrowpass.com. Because our membership prices will be increasing September 1st. So if you've been considering signing up, now is the time to go get locked in to our low introductory prices as a founding member before the prices go up. Come and get it while it's hot, people. Our level one program is less than $10 a month right now, so it's truly an amazing bargain. We are thrilled to be helping growers all over the country save time and money and headache with mygrowpass.com. We've got the member podcast up there with extra episodes of me and Wolfman and Travers and Rich and the whole crew. If you just can't get enough of GrowCast, that's a great option for you guys. You got to check it out. You've heard about the amazing exclusive discounts from our partners, upwards of 20 and 25% off of a dozen amazing grow products, you know, Gorilla Grow Tents and Sweet Leaf Nutrients, Dr. Zymes, Pest Eliminators, just for our members because of the relationships that we have with our partners. Those same partners also help put together the GrowPass 5K giveaway, where we're giving away $5,000 in prizes to five lucky members. The grand prize pack is huge, with a grow tent and light fixture and newts and soil. So much going on. And of course, the AMAs, where you can talk with me and Wolfman, and we'll answer your questions and your follow-up questions. So again, if you've been considering it, now is the time to join mygrowpass.com. We would love to have you on board as a member and help you save a whole bunch of time, money, and a whole bunch of hassle. So please, mygrowpass.com before prices go up. You won't regret it. Thank you all so much for listening to this show. I wish you the best of luck this weekend in your gardens and beyond. Without further ado, please enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. We have Jake from Northern Frost Genetics on the line. I'm going to talk about his strains and breeding and growing and autoflowers, a bunch of exciting stuff. How you doing today, Jake?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic. Jake, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, my friend.
No problem, sir.
Okay, let's dive right in, man. Let's talk about Northern Frost Genetics. My listeners can find you at northernfrostgenetics.com. Why don't we start with your work in autoflowers? And what got you into autoflowers, why you're so passionate about them, and all that good stuff.
All honesty, I kind of got started with autoflowers for my own personal reasons. Back in the day, you know, when growing was still illegal, my buddy had a nice chunk of property, and probably the back 20 acres of it was nothing but, you know, sparse woods. But In the midst of all the woods, you know, there'd be nice little spots where the sun would shine through. Mm-hmm. So we actually got a hold of a bunch of autoflower seeds, probably, early 2000s, and started doing some breeding with them simply so that we could have enough seeds to be able to fill the back of my buddy's property. Little did I know then, you know, how enjoyable they would be. And honestly, after growing them a few times, I quickly saw, you know, the benefit in them, especially as medical days came up. The second medical day, honestly, I figured every grandma would be growing autoflowers in their house as houseplants.
The simplicity is definitely appealing.
Well,
I'm a big fan of that side of the industry and that push. Cannabis as a houseplant is something that's come up on my show before. And I think autoflowers really play a big role in that. But why don't you tell us kind of how autoflowers have evolved? I've had multiple growers, I've had multiple breeders, a lot of them who aren't even involved in autoflower, openly say autoflowers are not what they used to be. Do you agree with that statement? Can you shed any light in that arena?
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. Well, I mean, to get into that, we got to kind of go back to what autoflowers originally were. Autoflowers were plants that naturally grew above the northern hemisphere, up in places like Siberia, up in Alaska, you know, places where during the summer they have endless amounts of sun, but the second that sun starts to go away, it goes away really quick. So having a photo period plant up there would not make sense. So nature just kind of did auto flowering for us. I just figured that out. We started taking those basic Ruderalis plants and crossbreeding those, you know, with our hybrid indicas and sativas.
Right.
And that's how we're able to get more structure to our plants. Back when I first started growing autoflowers, you were lucky if you got anything bigger than a foot, maybe a foot and a half, and very rarely would anything ever branch out. It was just a single cola plant.
Is that just from refinement? Because more and more people are getting involved and more people are reaching those desired effects?
Exactly. Of course, just like anything, it's all about that hybridization. Crossbreeding, to get the desired effects out of both plants that you want. Now, right. Autoflowers these last few years have really come up because, again, as you stated before the podcast started, they've really started to take off. Again, back in the day, a single cola, is what you were lucky if you got. I think these days, the record-holding autoflower is something like 5 pounds.
Right. So we've kind of knocked down those barriers to autoflower entry. Well, let me just be honest. Let me be frank. Yield was one of them. Another was potency. It's like autoflowers were considered lower quality all around. Would you challenge that statement now as opposed to then?
All honesty, so when it comes to autoflowers, they're still going to be lower potency just because they don't have all that time, to build structure to a plant, to build those great gateways
sure.
for nutrients and everything to be fed up to the rest of the plant. I will say, yes, through hybridization, they have definitely gotten a lot stronger. Then again, it's really hard to say, though, because we didn't test back in the day. So, we were just kind of basically going off of, what it looked like back in the day.
Yes.
There was no actual numbers being put out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And they have gotten much prettier. But I'll tell you, one of the things I'm really interested in is people aren't really growing for dry bud weight a lot of the time now. There's a large portion of people that are just interested in the resin, whether it's live resin or distillate or whatever, they're going to use it for processing. Do you think that autoflowers are going to be a big player in that field?
I definitely think so. It's already started to come out a lot in hemp. In hemp, they don't, consider dry flower weight or anything. They all call it biomass. It's how much biomass were you able to get out of the plant? And that's every part of the plant that you're going to use and extract or turn into something. There's definitely been a big push for CBD autoflowers.
Right.
I know there's places in the Midwest, they have great growing summers, but the second those winters hit, they hit hard. So I could definitely see a benefit, being able to do a three summer harvest of autoflowers.
Right.
Completely CBD genetics, zero THC in them. Because, of course, that's where the market's moving just because complete legalization everywhere.
Where do you like to see autoflowers? Is this what excites you the most about autoflowers, the CBD side of things? What is your favorite part?
Like I said, what excited me the most about autoflowers is literally the day every grandma, every person has an autoflower in their house.
I always
the
say
everybody just puts a pot in front of the sunniest window in their house, and lets it go.
The simplicity is golden, man. You really can't beat that. And my grower audience are usually people who are more, into the process, but you're right. The way you overgrow the world is with autoflowers. Very interesting. And I always say, always said this, the underrated benefit of the autoflowers, you can carry them around like a pet. You can bring them places, show them things. That's pretty great.
Yes. Yeah. You're not going to mess it up if you take it out of its light cycle. That's definitely not going to happen. And honestly, the biggest thing I've found with autoflowers, especially when it comes to newer growers, a lot of newer growers have just a hard time gauging when to water plants and not overing watering plants or underwatering plants and everything.
Sure. Yeah.
Autoflowers, it takes away all the other thinking, and all you have to focus is giving that plant water, keeping that plant alive, keeping that plant in the best health possible. It takes away, all the light cycles. It gives growers a lot of options where they didn't normally have options. I'm based out of Washington, and, once it rains, the rain doesn't stop here.
Right.
Nothing ever dries out here once it gets wet. So, unless you're doing light depot, at least here in Western Washington, you're not getting plants to finish outside unless you're doing autoflowers.
So fascinating, man. I love all the applications. What have you found is the optimal, or just talk about the differences in growing mediums and methodologies for autoflowers? Do you find that they do well in most setups? Do you find that autoflowers do well in organic super soil, but not so much in hydro setups? Do you have any sort of insight on that?
Yes. Autoflowers are actually kind of a bit lower feeders, again, because they don't have all that veg time to, you know, get those big super highways to ship all those nutrients around the plant with. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed, you know, just a good base soil, maybe a little light organic nutrients, you know, and really you don't need too much with them. Again, that's why it's great for new growers, because it really just brings you down to the basics. You know what I mean? You could literally go buy a bag of Happy Frog and have some water, and as long as you leave it out for 24 hours and get that chlorine out of it, you know what I mean, you should be good to go.
Nice.
You're at least going to end up growing something that you want to smoke in then. And honestly, that's, I think, everybody's end result, growing something they want to smoke. So many times I see people with regular plants and they're so focused on, you know, light cycles and what nutrients I got to feed it. And they go and spend a ton of money on all this stuff. And then they end up growing larfy, leafy stuff that they can't give away to their friends.
Right. Well, you got to start with good genetics. That's definitely a first step. Nice little tip on the dechlorination, though. A lot of people, you know, when you're coming right out of the tap, don't realize you got chlorine, sometimes chloramine, which is even more stable in that water, which can harm that bacteria, and the positive biology in the soil. Nice little tip there. I like that. But why don't we talk about genetics, man? Why don't we talk about your work and what you like as far as your line right now? NorthernFrostGenetics.com. You've got some great products. Let's just start from the top. What new strains are you developing, or the newest strains? And what about those strains stands out? Why do you like them? Why do you love them?
So our newest drop was a few GDP crosses that we had done. We've actually been working with GDP for quite some time. One of our, I want to say, silent partners, he actually used to be a breeder for Ken Estes back in the day. So if you actually look on our menu, we got a strain called Purple Source Rex, which is Super Lemon Haze times GDP. And I think that one was actually bred back in 2002 for GDP genetics and just never got dropped.
Man, that looks delicious. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, so we've been doing, you know, a little work with some GDP genetics. Basically, we're big indica fans. You know, both me and my partner up here in the Northwest. The reason we named it Northern Frost Genetics is, I mean, we're just going to grow what we like to smoke up here, and hopefully everybody else likes it too, is our end goal. If you notice, we got a lot of hard-hitting indicas on our menu. We do a lot of work with the 9-pound hammer. G13 is another one of our big staple plants that we work with, you know, just really big on them heavy indicas. A lot of stuff, you know, that is true medicine. When it comes down to, I mean, as much as, you know, it is nice to be able to smoke a bowl and have the energy to go do something, sativas, I mean, for a lot of people, aren't medicine. They give people anxiety, you know what I mean?
That's true.
They don't really help with inflammation or anything like that.
Fascinating. Yeah, that's a good point. So you are heavy on the medicinal side. You really like helping people with their pain and stuff like that.
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, I haven't seen it go around too much, you know, since it's not really that way. But back in the medical days, it used to be a big thing to hear people say patients before profits.
Right.
Of course, you know, now we're rec side, and most people, even on the rec side, don't realize that they're medicating. But everybody's using this plant as some sort of medicine, one way or another, whether you realize it or not, even if it's just you had a hard day and you want to relax at the end of the day.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with that. So I love Granddaddy Purple. I'm all about these strains. Then I've talked about it on the show. Favorite strain to grow, probably Quirkle. And if I'm going to a dispensary, favorite popular strain to smoke, I love GDP. So I'm super interested in this Purple Source Rex. Why don't we talk a little bit about your autos, though? Looks like you have Strikeout Auto. Looks delicious. And this Supersonic Auto looks pretty powerful. Which one of those would you recommend if you just had to recommend one?
I mean, off the top of my head, I would throw out the strikeout. Supersonic was actually the very first auto I started with. That's what got me into the autos. That's the one I started, like I said, back in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And it's come a long way since then. It's probably got an F12 now. And like I said, when I actually, it's kind of interesting because when I first started off with that plant, like I said, it was just a single cola plant. As I've taken it through more and more generations, more and more selective breeding, and now does start to branch off a bit. It gets a little bit bigger than it used to. It's pretty unique to be able to see the evolution of a single strain like that.
That is really cool.
So then we took that strain and crossed it with, you know, what is my favorite regular strain, which is 9-pound hammer. Also, you know, also a little homage to my good buddy Jinx. He's pretty much the reason I'm in the breeding game.
Nice. Yeah, we had him on. I really like that guy, man. He's got a good soul. He's got a good vibe about him.
Yes, he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, big fan of talking to that guy. And so you say that you use 9-pound hammer, which is probably his most popular strain, frequently. You just love the way that it breeds.
I love the way it breeds. I love the taste of it. I love the stone of it. The effects of it are amazing. Honestly, most people I end up talking to, they actually can't even touch the strain because it's too heavy.
Right. Well, I'm right there with you, man. I am a heavy stoner too, so I'm a big fan of the indicas. I almost smoke exclusive indicas. But I cut you off there. You took the 9-pound hammer and crossed it with your supersonic to get strikeout.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Now it's all coming together. Well, it sure looks pretty.
It's a gorgeous plant. The terps are amazing.
Oh, the terps.
I was actually very fortunate to be able to do that one, because I don't know if you've heard of Mephisto Genetics.
Sure.
They do exclusive auto flower breeding, and they had actually contacted Jinx in hopes to be able to turn his 9-pound hammer into auto flower. And he's like, actually, I already got somebody kind of working on that, so.
Nice. Good to stake that out. Very, very sweet looking.
Good to have good friends.
Yeah, for sure. It's all about relationships, man. I love that. Let's see here. As far as growing, let's stick with strikeout, because you seem to be passionate about these autos. What advice do you have for growing these strains? You mentioned that they were low feeders, so people probably want to go lower than low. Do you have any advice as far as like plant training, or if they like to be grown out big in big pots, or if they do better in Sea of Green? What advice do you have for my audience who might be growing your strains?
So obviously pot size is going to make a big difference with any size, any type of plant, but especially with the auto flower, because, you know, again, they only have so much veg time. So once their roots start to hit the walls and they start to get that stunt, it's really going to affect them, because you don't have time to bring it back.
Mm-hmm. So they're more effective in Sea of Green, I'd imagine.
Yes. Personally, my favorite way to grow them is in big, large beds, even nice. Indoors, you know, a nice 4x8 bed under two lights. I normally grow under 600s just because the little bit more energy efficiency on them. I know most of the people these days have just jumped up to 1,000 and don't even care about cost or anything, but, I like to more keep my grow to the size I think most of my my customers are going to be at. That way I really get to see, you know, what it's going to do in their style environment. I actually have a couple small tents that I grow in just to do a lot of my testing in. Again, that way I'm you know, more matching the environment I believe they're going to end up in.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. What light cycles do you usually grow with as far as, let's say, well, you tell me veg and flowering. What does that look like with an auto flower run?
Auto flowers, I like to keep them 18-6. All cannabis plants are technically nightshades, so they do a lot of their growing at night. So even though with an auto flower, you could keep it 24 hours light, at what point is that really all that natural? I mean, I guess with auto flowers, it is a little bit more natural because, again, they're up in the Northern Hemisphere where, God, on June 20th, you know, June 21st, you do have 23, 24 hours of light.
Right, that's a good point. But I guess natural versus optimal, right? They could be two different things, I guess.
Exactly. I've also noticed with auto flowers, there's a few little tricks I've come up with. if you want to grow a little bit bigger autoflower, especially, you know, doing it outdoors wise, I've noticed if you start them in smaller pots and transplant them, sometimes when you're doing the transplanting, you could actually stunt the flower time a little bit and get a little bit longer veg out of them.
Oh, interesting. The shock will set them back?
Yes. But now, again, the wrong type of shock will also trigger them.
Right.
So,
are they?
You got to be really careful when you're messing with them.
What about environment? Are they sensitive to heat? Or do you got to keep them, you know, from getting too cold because they're already going to tend to not have that explosive growth? What about environment?
So, all honesty, I mean, as far as cold goes, they're probably hardier than most plants are because, again, where they're used to growing, you know what I mean? At optimal grow season, it's 65, maybe 70 on the hottest days.
Interesting.
And then, of course, at night, you know, it's down into the 20s and 30s.
Yeah, that's a messed up part of the world, man. Like blazing hot summers and then freezing winters. So, yeah. Oh, and I never thought of that. I never really thought of that. So, yes, it doesn't have the explosive growth, but it is overall a hardier plant.
Yeah. I was going to say, it actually took me probably 7 years before I ever hermied my first autoflower.
Huh. Wow.
I was actually under the assumption at one point that maybe they can't hermie.
That's so funny, man, because I've heard that so many times, you know, like the, oh, you're going to get all sorts of anomalies and genetic anomalies. And then I'm talking to a guy who exclusively grew autoflowers. He's like, yeah, I had hermie issues. It was like one plant in this big room. I was like, dude, I would get that with traditional clones all the time. Like that's just natural. So what's the deal then? Why is that a common consensus? Is that the kind of old autoflower, stigma? Or honestly, is it just a falsehood?
I think that a lot of it comes from people who've A, never grown autoflowers.
Ah.
Or B, then a lot of the people, especially back in the day, a lot of the people who did grow autoflowers weren't the best growers. You know what I mean? The reason they picked autoflowers is, again, to take out a lot of those other factors.
Good point. That is
so,
a good point.
So, I mean, when you're dealing with a bunch of novice growers, you're definitely bound to have more issues. I mean, that's just a given.
That is a good point, man. Very astute.
But again, yeah, I just think it was more of a put down from people who didn't actually grow autoflowers. People who didn't quite fully even understand what they were.
Well, I just think it's so cool because that's why we've had so much progression in the other breeding markets is because that's where everyone is. But now as more people move over to autoflowers and more people have been doing autoflowers for longer, they're catching up in so many ways. And I think that they're going to probably be superior in a lot of ways in just a few coming years. I can only imagine. Real quick, let's talk about where people can get your seeds. Why don't you talk about your seed bank for a second?
I was going to say, all my seeds can be found through Pacific Northwest Seeds. It's PNW Seeds on Instagram or PNWSouvenirs.com is the website. We also do carry Jinx's stuff as well.
Nice.
That's actually what truly gave me the final push to start the seed company. I started PNW Seeds 6 years ago, and at first we started only carrying TGA genetics, and then we started to branch out. We worked with Mr. Nice for a while. Then when, of course, Jinx split away from TGA, I went with Jinx because, you know, he was the whole reason I got brought into the company originally.
Right.
After, you know, bouncing around for a little bit, doing the thing with just Jinx for a while, I felt it was time to finally throw my hat in the ring. Plus, you know, you can never have too many options.
I agree with that statement.
I know I personally love looking at, you know, menu lists and, again, never too many options.
I'm right there with you, man. And that's why it also helps to have resources like this where I can get the breeders on air to talk about their stuff. I'm having you on here because you're a passionate breeder. You have advice for the growers, and the growers are either on a pheno hunt or maybe they're considering changing or they just want to learn more about genetics. So having spoken to you and Subcool and Jinx and all these different growers, whether or not they're associated with our program, it's been very enlightening, and I do appreciate it, man. I appreciate you all say yes. You're all very passionate people, and you're all very generous with your time, it seems.
Well, as you said, there's definitely that passion there. And I'm sure as you've kind of figured out, even though, you know, you've talked to a lot of great growers. We all have a little bit different take on everything.
Oh, for sure.
There's probably a million different ways to grow cannabis.
100%. Yeah, that's why I love this show, man. It's been very interesting. Let's talk about some more of your strains here before we maybe wrap up with a couple breeding tips. Let's talk about classics. You said the Supersonic was your old school strain. What about a your old school autoflower strain? What about a non-autoflower strain? What old work are you most proud of?
Oh, like I said, Purple Source is probably the oldest strain on there that we're working with. That one and the Fire GDP that's in Papa Fuego, again, both done back in the early 2000s for Ken Estes. Both very amazing strains. All honesty, it's kind of funny every now and then, you know, you see one of those internet posts about like the weed back in the 70s and high times and everything.
And yeah, it all looks goofy and it's all like,
it all looks goofy. And it's like, you know, honestly, I don't think all the weed looked like that back in the days. It's just probably the people who had the balls to send pictures into high times.
Yeah, time. Totally.
You know, anybody growing real amounts of good weed, they didn't want to get busted.
That's a good point. Yeah, the self-selecting audience.
Yeah, honestly, I'm a huge fan of being able to work with older strains. Honestly, I'm afraid a lot of the really good older strains we're going to end up losing just because the market's not going that way. Everything's going, you know, towards OGs and hotness, fruity flavors.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. If I pop in that Purple Saurus Rex, what can I expect? Any tips on that strain?
Honestly, you'll find both dominant leaners on each end. You'll find, you know, super sativa leaners. You'll find super indica leaners. We found one that is a perfect hybrid, nice big sativa structure to the plant, but full GDP flavor and highness to it. We originally named that strain Purple Saurus Rex after the grape lemonade Kool-Aid flavor. And there's definitely a few phenos in there that are nothing but grape lemonade as far as flavor goes.
That's awesome. One more strain I got to touch on, Through the Wire. Probably your most visually impressive strain on the website, in my opinion. What can you tell me about Through the Wire?
That was actually one of our first limited releases. So any of the 9-pound hammer crosses that we originally did, minus Lee and You, ended up being a limited release. And I think I actually only did probably 30 packs of Through the Wire.
Oh, wow.
And funniest thing about that strain is we had dropped that strain at Emerald Cup the exact same weekend Jinx dropped his Madcap, which is the same cross but opposite.
So oh, he used 9-pound hammer,
mother tongue male and 9-pound hammer female, where we used a 9-pound hammer male and mother tongue female.
That is fascinating.
And we actually weren't really talking about our crosses at that time. So it was completely, you know, surprise to both of us that we happened to be dropping the exact same.
Great minds think alike, I guess. Crosses. Right? That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good sign, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And before we jump back in with Jake from Northern Frost, we got to give a little love to our sponsors. First, Sohum Soils. These are those super soil guys. Seen people get great results. Go to sohumsoils.com, sohumsoils.com. Promo code GROWCAST10 gets you 10% off. And mygrowpass.com members get 20% off site-wide. Sohum Soils was created to take the thinking out of growing. With all the liquid nutrients on the market, consumers are afraid to be a chemist when mixing nutrients. No need for that with Sohum Soils. Just add plain water. That's it. They've got a chart that shows you the proper container size so you have enough food for the entire flowering cycle just adding water. The soil is designed with beneficial bacteria and fungus as well as macro and micronutrients. Just set it and forget it. That's it. SohumSoils.com, promo code GROWCAST10. And finally, today's show is brought to you by Danny Danko's new book, Cannabis, A Beginner's Guide to Growing Marijuana. Just go to growcastpodcast.com/Danko to get this wonderful book. It's great for beginners and also great for the experienced growers, because even the experienced growers know you got to keep your game going. You got to stay on the basics to stay high level. So grab a book. Go to growcastpodcast.com/Danko to get it from Amazon, get it from us. And if you're a GrowPass Bloom member, email us at contact@growcastpodcast.com and Danny Danko will sign your book. Very cool, everybody. growcastpodcast.com/Danko. Thank you all so much. Let's get back to the show. Well, do you want to give a couple breeding tips before we wrap up here? I'd love to pick your brain a little bit if you're open. Just some general stuff. Maybe you could talk about what makes a good mom and a good dad, what you look for in plants when you're picking for the parents.
So honestly, when I'm picking for a mom, I'm usually looking for one specific thing. I'm either looking for that structure. I'm looking for that flavor. You know what I mean? Just because that's the easiest thing to pick out in the mom, you know what I mean? In a dad, you could get some smell off of it, but you never know what flavor it's going to, you know, transfer over to the moms.
Right.
And there's definitely no looking at a dad and being like, oh, that dad's got great structure to its buds. You know what I mean?
Right.
So as far as the mom goes, that's really what I go for. As far as dad goes, it really all depends what kind of strains I'm working with. Lately, I've been working with some blueberry crosses. And when I look for a male for the blueberry, I look for literally the craziest, stretched out, you know, wildest looking male I could possibly find, because I know that, you know, it's going to be my closest to the blueberry genetics. Blueberry genetics are normally still very close to land races, at least if you get a real blueberry. Biggest thing I've noticed, though, when it comes to breeding, is definitely your male selection. It's easy, you know, to get a good mom.
Right.
So many cuts out there, so many great, you know, strains out there these days. Easy to hit up a buddy. Hey, let me get a few strains of this. Not a lot of people keep around males, and those who do have males don't give them out because they're you know, prized breeding males. When it comes to male selection, stability is key.
Okay.
You do not want that thing to start flipping itself, you know, in your bedroom. Males have a tendency to do that. And the biggest thing I've noticed with males is you want a male that is going to start flowering later in its life. If you put the male and female in your flower room and that male is instantly showing itself, where the female takes about a week to, you know, really show pistils or anything on it, male's probably not worth it. That male should be about the same rate as that female is.
Ooh, that's good advice.
When doing that, it makes it a little bit harder because, of course, the later you pollinate your females, the less mature all your seeds are going to be.
Right, and the less you'll have of them.
Yes. So that's why a good breeder will keeps his, you know, prized male around. That way he could start to flower it a week before the females.
Love it.
Optimal pollinization time is probably in between 3 and 4 weeks. Once you start getting too much later than that, you're going to end up with at least 50 to 60% white seeds that are unviable.
Do you have any tips as far as seed health or maximum seed production or anything like that? Seed count?
Biggest thing with seeds is, if you were to ever get anything late in plant life on seeds, you know, as far as bugs or mildew or anything, I think your best bet would literally just be to let the plants go. Spraying a chemical on the seeds, I think, would be your worst thing you could possibly do, opposed to, you know, even coming out and literally your plant dying because it got overtaken. I think at then you would still be have better chances of getting more viable seeds than if you were to spray it with some nasty chemicals.
Right.
the biggest thing with seeds is storing them, though. You know, they don't like big temperature swings. If you have them inside a Ziploc baggie or a jar or something, you start to get those big temperature swings, you'll obviously start to get the beer can effect on the inside of that container. And now moisture will ruin those seeds. So really, a cool, dry, consistently heated place. You're not really going to do too much damage to the seeds as far as hot goes, unless you start getting up into 100, 110 degrees.
Okay. It's more about the moisture.
That's the biggest thing I've noticed with seeds, especially with shipping them goes. Sometimes, you know, shipping seeds, they go up in the airplane, it gets really cold up in there, and then they go down to somewhere hot. And if the guy doesn't get out to his mailbox very quickly, he could end up with some unviable seeds.
Great advice. That makes a lot of sense too. Have you heard about enzyme products being used to improve propagation rate and that sort of thing. Someone on my show was talking about soaking their seeds in an enzyme product like the amazing Dr. Zymes, for instance, and supposedly, which is all natural, you know, it's just an enzyme product, and it supposedly softens the herd and improves. Have you heard anything like this? Do you think it's unnecessary? You do just fine. What are your thoughts?
I personally, I think it's unnecessary. I do know people, you know, for years have soaked their seeds 24 hours before they put them into a paper towel or put them in the dirt to try to sprout them, that way to soften the shell. I've also noticed over the last year or two, they started selling seed crackers.
Oh yeah, those seed crackers. That's right. To give them a little bust. What do you think of those?
Personally, man, I like messing with Mother Nature as least as possible. I mean, they're a plant. They're going to do a thing. And more so, they're a weed.
Right.
It is in their DNA to thrive and survive.
Yeah. So even if they were doomed from the start, maybe that's a sign genetically and from Mother Nature that they weren't meant to propagate.
That's how I would take it. The last thing you really want to do is end up spending a bunch of your time and more so a bunch of your money on bad genetics. You know what I mean? Personally, when I pop seeds, if a few seeds start to are taking longer than the others, I'll throw those ones. I only want the strongest, most viable genetics I could possibly get. Same with when you take cuts. A lot of people, they'll take cuts and they'll literally use every single cut they take. You always got to take more cuts than you need just because you never know, you know, what you're going to have as far as rooting goes. But B, it's always nice to be able to pick out your strongest,
yes,
you know, cuts. That way you keep those genetics going good. I've heard a lot of people talk about genetic drift over the years. Mm-hmm. I will say I have noticed with some genetics, it's almost inevitable. You know, after time, the cuttings just don't root like they used to. The plants start to lose a little bit of vigor. A lot of the times, though, I truly think it is an environmental thing.
I agree 100%.
People not taking the strongest cuts, not taking cuts at the strongest point in the plant, you know, taking cuts in the middle of flowering. That's a big one I've noticed that a lot of people do.
Man, yeah, genetic drift has come up a lot on this show, and a lot of people just think it's bull crap. And it's really interesting what you just said, because everyone knows that grower who's been taking good cuttings and growing the same strain for so long. So I never really thought there's definitely a lot of factors that could play into it. One being poor practices, poor propagation practices, like you were just saying.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason the big classic strains are still around, you know what I mean? And
have been around
since the 70s,
right?
Northern Lights and stuff. You know what I mean? The G13 that I grow, came from UW in like 78.
Right. So clearly it's possible. Yeah, but there is definitely also a refinement that takes place of some kind. But I don't think that it's just genetic drift. That makes it sound like some sort of like inbred anomaly with living like, you know, species or something. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. Fortunately enough for us, cannabis is the exact opposite of humans in that way. You know, when you start to inbreed it and everything, you only make the genetics stronger normally.
Mm.
You know, and of course, unless you're having bad selection in your breeding.
Right.
That's actually a big reason. Me personally, we try to stay away from F2ing and F3ing a lot of our strains, minus the autoflowers, just because autoflowers, they need it, you know,
that extra stability. Care. Yeah, for sure.
For instance, when I made Strikeout, I first started with a 9-pound hammer male and a Supersonic female. When I got those first set of beans, maybe 1 in 1,000 autoflowered.
Yeah.
And then after I bred that next set, then it dropped down to, you know, maybe 1 in 200 autoflowered, then, oh, you know, wow. 1 in 100, and then like 1 in 25. So with autoflowers, especially when you're taking a regular strain and crossing it with autoflower, you have to take it to F5 to F7, somewhere in between there, just to get a full stable autoflower.
Wow. Man, that is fascinating stuff. Man, yeah. I'm very... I feel very enlightened. I appreciate you taking the time to do this episode, man. It's been great.
Oh, no, I truly appreciate it, man.
Yeah. Is there anything you want to add before we sign off here? I feel like you gave a ton of great information. Everyone needs to check out northernfrostgenetics.com, obviously. Any final words on breeding or growing or anything?
Again, I'm going to go back to, you know, what I've seen with a lot of new growers. A lot of new growers overcomplicate things, overthink things. Personally, I'm all about that KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid.
I love it.
These plants are weeds. They're going to naturally grow. You know what I mean? If you just threw a bunch of them outside, they're literally going to take over your entire yard, you know, within a year. They're weeds. They're going to thrive. The worst thing you could do is mess with them too much.
Do you feel that people set their expectations so high and love the plant so much that they want a perfect product, which leads them to overcomplicate things, which often leads them to, I don't know, fry their plants or get nutrient lockout and get, you know what I mean? Is it coming from a place of love, this overcomplication?
I'm not necessarily sure a case of love or more of a case of,
Is it like someone put it as the snowboarder mentality, which is the like up it more, which is like, if I give it more of this bottle, then it's going to have more better buds. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Is that what you're trying
exactly
to?
Exactly what it is.
I knew that's what you were trying to articulate. All I heard was your, bits, and I knew it.
You've seen the little bits that they've seen and then trying to take it to the extreme.
Right.
Oh, well, if you super crop a plant and it makes it stronger, let me super crop the entire plant. Well, now you've literally broken every cell in the plant.
Right.
And the plant
crippled,
can't survive.
Crippled the plant.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or, feming plants. That's the biggest one I've seen. I've walked into so many new gardens and there's like two leaves on every single plant and that's it. They've stripped everything else off the plant.
Right. I've seen that heavy defoliation.
They need something to grow.
True. Wow, this has been enlightening. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Jake. It's been fun.
Yes, sir. It's definitely enjoyable.
Everybody out there listening, northernfrostgenetics.com, growcastpodcast.com. Give us a rating and review on whatever you're listening to us on. Make sure you're subscribed, everybody. This is Jake from Northern Frost Genetics and Jordan River signing off. Thanking you for listening and saying be safe and grow smarter.